This is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. We have some wonderful guests on for you today. In the first half, we're going to be talking to Shannon Kaiser. She's the author of the Self-Love Experiment. And in the second half, Dr. A.J. Goel is going to talk to us about frankincense. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Ever notice that too little sleep at night can cause you to space out the next day? New research suggests that a lack of sleep hampers communication between brain cells, causing temporary mental errors that affect memory and visual perception. That can lead to problems ranging from minor ones, such as forgetting your keys when you leave the house, to more serious consequences, such as lack of awareness while driving. Study senior author Dr. Itzhak Fried said they discovered that starving the body of sleep also robs neurons of the ability to function properly. This leads to mental lapses in how we perceive and react to the world around us. He is a professor of neurosurgery at the University of California, Los Angeles, and Tel Aviv University in Israel. The study included 12 epilepsy patients who had electrodes placed in their brains prior to surgery to pinpoint the origin of their seizures. The study was published online November 6th in the journal Nature Medicine. As the opioid epidemic continues to sweep across the United States, a new study suggests that a combination of Motrin and Tylenol may work as well as narcotic painkillers for emergency room patients who suffer sprains or fractures. Lead researcher Dr. Andrew Chang said although this study focused on treatment while in the emergency department, if we can successfully treat acute extremity pain with a non-opioid combination painkiller in there, then we might be able to send these patients home without an opioid prescription. He's a professor of emergency medicine at Albany Medical Center in Albany, New York. Ibuprofen and acetaminophen work in different ways, and the combination may provide an extra pain-relieving kick, the researchers theorized. The study was published November 7th in the Journal of the American Medical Association. The sooner the deadly skin cancer melanoma is treated, the more likely a patient is to survive. Researchers analyzed data from more than 153,000 American adults diagnosed with stage 1 to 3 melanoma between 2004 and 2012. No matter what stage their cancer was, those who waited more than 90 days for surgical treatment were more likely to die, and postponing surgery for more than 29 days led to lower survival rates for patients with stage 1 melanoma, though not for those with stage 2 or 3. Patients who put off their treatment tended to be older men who also had other health problems. Primary investigator Dr. Brian Gassman said the ideal timing for melanoma treatment, predominantly surgery, had yet to be determined until now. He is director of melanoma surgery at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio. The Cleveland Clinic study was published online recently in the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. A pill widely taken to prevent heart attack and stroke may also guard against cancer, new research suggests. Warfarin is an inexpensive blood thinner. It's typically prescribed for patients whose leg arteries are prone to clots and for patients with the abnormal heartbeat called atrial fibrillation. Now, Norwegian investigators say it may also protect against any type of cancer and from prostate, lung, and breast cancer in particular. Lower colon cancer risk was also reported, but only in people taking warfarin for AFib, according to the study. Lead researcher James Lawrence cautioned the findings don't prove that warfarin reduces the risk of cancer. The report was published online November 6th in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine.
Shannon Kaiser is an incredible woman with a mission to help people find peace, happiness, and fulfillment in their lives. She is the author of the book, The Self-Love Experiment. Welcome, Shannon.
Hi, it's so great to be here.
It's so good to have you on the show. So why this book and why now?
Oh, it's so important. I think for many, many years, I had an inner critic that was kind of a raging war for almost three decades. And it was trying to tell me I wasn't good enough, smart enough, pretty enough. And I started doing research and I realized that this wasn't just me. In fact, it affects almost 95% of us, where we have an inner voice that tries to tell us we're not doing good, we're off track. And it's sabotaging us from being happy. So what I actually did is I went on my own self-love experiment. And I went on an inner journey to really learn how to become your own best friend and transform that inner doubt into self-love.
Mm-hmm. And in the first, in part one of your book, your one of your chapters is difficult roads lead to divine destinations. What's that all about?
Yeah, sometimes we go through situations and we feel like the problems in our life are catastrophic. And they really are, and if you look at them for face value. But what this really means, difficult roads lead to divine destinations, is there's learning through each stage of our life. So we can actually reflect back on our life, maybe a situation that seems the layoff, the pink slip you got, or, you know, a disease or divorce or something, and it seemed very bad. But then you know, you get to a place where you can move through it, and we can learn from our past by really looking at what it's teaching us, and it's there in our life to help us grow and really learn more about ourselves.
So there's some very important things we need to look at from the past in order to really have self-love.
Yes, I think for all of us, sometimes, you know, we don't really walk around saying we don't love ourselves. Our parents did the best they can, but most of the time, you know, it's not something people say. A lot of times we feel self-love is selfish, right? I did for many, many years. And so really it's about kind of flipping that on its head and recognizing that self-love is actually, we do deserve it because it's about feeling good. It's about taking care of yourself. And when you do that, you can actually be there for your family. You can be there for your community, and you can help lift up the whole world, really.
Mm-hmm. Right on the cover of your book, you say, Shannon Kaiser inspires people to ditch what doesn't serve them and follow the path to true joy and satisfaction. That does sound a little bit selfish, ditching whatever doesn't serve you. How can you be a servant and then ditch everything that doesn't serve you?
Ah, this is such a great question. So really it's about letting go of what's not working in our life. Sometimes we attach ourselves to habits, you know, thoughts, and sometimes places, situations, jobs, things that we've outgrown. Every next level of our life will require a next level of us, so to speak, and I talk about this in the book, where ditching what doesn't serve you isn't necessarily a selfish thing. It's actually a fulfilling thing because you feel lighter, you feel more grounded, and you feel more connected to yourself.
And this syndrome that you write about, this when is tomorrow going to be today, what's that all about?
This is something I think a lot of us do, where we wait for happiness. We say, I'll be happy when I lose weight. I'll be happy when I make more money, when I find my soulmate, when I get my job. You know, it goes on and on. It's the almost paradise syndrome, where we're trying so hard to make something happen, but in the meantime, our life is happening right now, and we're missing it. And so I call it the almost paradise syndrome, and it's a process that you can go through where you can learn how to accept where you are, because this is our life, right?
Mm-hmm. And in this experiment for you to learn self-love, what's the magic of the self-care?
Self-care is so important for all of us. And I think sometimes we, especially in the wellness industry, we kind of focus on, am I drinking my green juice? Am I doing yoga? Am I counting my calories? You know, what's my number on the scale? And this can be kind of debilitating. For many years, I fell into this wellness A-plus warrior trap, so to speak. I was an endurance athlete and, you know, very regimented. And I recognized it actually caused me depression. I was suffocating from depression and eating disorders. I wasn't happy. So I actually reframe it, and wellness and self-care is really about joy. What brings us the most joy? I recognized I was really burnt out on kale. I was totally over yoga, and I actually wanted to do more nature hikes. I wanted to go enjoy foods out with friends instead of counting my calories. So let joy be your barometer for success for wellness.
Mm-hmm. And in self-care and self-knowledge, one of the quotes in there is, it's hard to love yourself when you're not being yourself. How do you find your authentic self to start really caring?
Oh, that's such a beautiful question. I think all of us have our authentic self within us. And it's really, love is within us. It's who we are. We're born into love, right? But It's the barriers and the beliefs and the things that are blocking us. So the process that I take people through in the book is really to remove the beliefs, remove the things that aren't working, to recognize that you are perfect as you are.
Okay. Shannon, explain some of the process.
Yes, so there's actually different principles that we can apply to our own life, and there's also five pillars to self-love. So if we're talking about the process, it really is a process, and once you know the combination, it's like you can unlock the combination. And you said it best, the first is self-care. Self-care is about showing up for yourself and choosing joy in your life, and then we move into self-trust, when we can trust ourselves more. And really, when you start to trust yourself, you start making better choices. And then the process kind of goes on from there. And then you arrive into a place of self-love.
Mm-hmm. And that's when you love yourself, even if you don't get up and do anything that day.
I love that you said that. Yes, because it's not about go, 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 achieve, be. You know, sometimes self-love is really about just being where you are and listening to your body. And if you need to sleep in or rest or call in sick just because you need a U day, it's totally okay. Self-love is really about self-compassion and being your own friend.
And part three of your book, Surrender to What Is.
This is probably the most important part, because surrender to what is means we accept what is. The overweight body, the low bank account, the specific diagnosis, the thing we think is causing us the most pain, and if it was only out of our life, everything would be better. It's actually about learning how to accept that. Not to say, I give up, I'm just going to, you know, settle. It's actually saying, I am aware of where I am so I can choose to move forward in a positive way.
So, Shannon, in your experiment, was this the hardest part, to learn to surrender?
You know, it was. I talk about this in the book, where not only writing the book was difficult, but it's really about allowing yourself to accept what is, and it comes back to loving the pieces of you think are unlovable. And it is difficult when we're running our life with our head, and the head is the critic that says you're not good enough, pretty enough, smart enough, it goes on. And so the process is about dropping into your heart. And once I dropped into my heart, which is the part of you, all of us, we all have hearts, and they say, you're worthy, you're right where you need to be, it's all okay, don't worry, you're lovable. Mm-hmm. And letting that lead us is really the work at play.
Shannon, tell me about how do you let go of fear?
Fear is something that is tricky because it runs our life when we're not aware. And fear can show up in sometimes deflecting compliments. Maybe someone gives you a compliment and you turn it away and say, no. Or, you know, fear shows up in our habits, overeating, overspending, overworking out. And what we want to do is recognize first by knowing that the inner critic in our mind that tells us all these really nasty things about ourselves is not necessarily true. It's actually not true at all. When we can learn to recognize that that's just a voice, it's a fear voice, we can actually stop it and then transform it into a more loving, kind voice.
Mm. So it's a matter of surrendering to right now, right where we are, accepting us just as we are.
Yeah, and I believe truly it's almost like in any 12-step program too. They always, no matter which program, you start with acceptance. And there's the famous quote, accept what you cannot change and change what you cannot accept. And hopefully I have the courage to know the difference, right? I kind of butchered that, but that's really the essence of the whole self-love process, to be able to know that you are worthy and you deserve everything you want in your life, but it first starts with believing in yourself and knowing that you're worth it.
Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the principles. You've got 15 principles that you work with. Can you tell us a little bit about those and how you derive them?
Absolutely. The self-love principles are really the groundwork of really putting self-love into your life. So all of the experiment turned into different approaches and tools, but when it boiled down in its essence, there's 15 principles, and I'll share some of my favorite. I think one that's really important is, as we talked about, as the cover of the book talks about, ditching what doesn't work. Number 4 is, to get what you want, you have to let go of what you don't want. And this is really, sometimes we try to hold on to things that aren't working. And this is what stops us from moving forward. And as soon as you release it and let it go, ditch it, if you will, you're able to move forward and get more opportunities and get what you really need. So that's one of my favorites. And then another favorite of the principles is, self-love is not about how you look or even what you do. It's about how you live. And sometimes, you know, we feel like self-love is selfish and is it really something I should be doing? Self-love is really just about accepting yourself and believing in yourself. And it's not, it has nothing to do with the color of your skin or the size of your body or what you do for a living. It's about choosing to be in your life and saying, I matter.
Mm-hmm. And one of your chapters is about thinking you don't have a choice when you really do. How do you get around that mind hurdle where we actually have freedom to choose?
Yeah, and I think that's the key word, freedom. We're looking for freedom at the core of everything. You know, to be a human is, we really want that freedom to choose. And so a lot of times we feel like we do not have a choice. And one of the chapters and principles is, thinking you don't have a choice is indeed a choice. And it's hard. This is probably the hardest one for people at first, because if we've just been diagnosed with a disease or the divorce just came at us, it's like, I did not choose this. But thinking we don't, it's not so much about what the situation is, it's about our reaction to the situation and how we choose to move forward. And if we choose to move forward in a way that allows us to feel empowered, then we can move through the situation much more, with more grace and ease.
Okay. Well, we've been talking to Shannon Kaiser, the author of Self-Love Experiment, and we are going to continue right after this break.